everybody, and welcome to this edition of Your Music, Your Way, the powerful path of sonic improvisation for accessing innate genius and liberating your unique and precious gifts. I'm here with Myrie Campbell, who is an amazing musician and artist that I met a few years ago, and this is our first time really to reconnect in quite a few years, so I'm really excited to have you with us, Myrie, and I'm looking forward to our conversation. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks, Daniel. It's lovely to be here.
So we're here in the context of a world that is changing so quickly that we're all kind of reeling and wondering how to proceed in ways that we can really feel safety, and we can feel some sense of community, and feel our own ability to share ourselves in a way that can make a positive difference in the world. And it seems to me that one of the most essential and helpful skills that any of us could learn at this point in time is to learn how to navigate the unknown with mastery. And when we do that well, it opens us to our fuller capacities to be creative and flexible and resilient. And it enables us to listen more deeply to each other, and to connect with each other, and to really offer our gifts with each other in a way that can make the kind of difference in the world that we would most like to make. And so I think that sonic improvisation is a really good metaphor and method for giving us practice with those skills. And so this is why I'm putting this summit together, is to gather people who have experience with music improvisation or sound improvisation, and to talk about some of these skills and talk about some of the ways that they can be beneficial for all of us, whether we're interested in playing music or not. And that said, I think we can all play music, and we are all musicians. And so there's some ways that we can talk about those things too. I have a lot of hope for the prospect of sonic improvisation to help us in all different areas of our lives. So I really appreciate you being here to participate in this collective exploration together. So Myrie is, from her beginnings as a viola player, Myrie Campbell's music questing has taken her to folk song, traditional fiddle, composition, songwriting, and improvised sounding, to her present creative place, which blends and transcends the skills that she has acquired in all of these areas. A performance by Myrie Campbell today takes her listeners on a journey with waypoints that include her own and a careful selection of others' songs, with audience participation, improvised vocal and viola, Scottish dance tunes, and passages of Bach. So she's here today to talk. I love this title. She's here today to talk with us about tickling the epic. Tickling the epic. I love that. That is just the best. That's the best. I mean, I got to give you the prize so far of the best title in the summit so far. And I've interviewed over half these people, so that rocks. So
well, I have to say they're not my words. They're my friend's words. We were hanging out together. Ellis Kirkhoven, his name is. And we were doing this work together. We were improvising, messing about. And he turned to me and he went, "Oh, Myrie," he said, "you tickle my epic." So I tickled his epic. And we just thought, what a fantastic phrase. And he's genius, that way. He's really got the words. So thanks to Ellis.
That's great. Well, so I would love to, I'm really so much looking forward to this conversation, because I know that you have explored this terrain for a long time, and you have, I'm sure, lots of stories and experiences to share with folks. And I'd like to start by just asking you to say a word or two about some of the early moments that you had in your life when it kind of occurred to you to do this kind of thing and to kind of walk this path of the mystic or the creative or the improviser.
The journey woman. I mean, I think all musicians are people, are journeying, the journeying people. We journey, don't we? I mean, so my connection to sound and music was very strong always, all my life. I remember my mother playing the piano and me kind of crying, sitting under the piano, crying to the beauty of the music, you know, just feeling really touched by it, just the way childhood, but then I had a voice. And my mother was very good. I feel I have a lot of gratitude to her for keeping me going on an instrument and having a sense that this thing you man talking about mastery, I felt that was been a big part of my life, which I took for granted. I went along with it, but I didn't really want to be a musician until I was about 16, when everything else at school fell away. I wasn't very good at other stuff. And I thought, well, actually, yeah, maybe the music's the thing. And I was interested in improvisation and traditional music for various sorts of reasons. I mean, you know, it was later the improvising came along where I was very attracted to that. And various teachers along the way and mentors I've encountered, and I've got a lot from every one of them. So in terms of music and improvising and blending together different modalities, which is what I'm kind of moved into at the moment around movement and word and sound. So the realizing that the various steps that occurred on the way was this sort of strict classical training, out of which I burst angrily and went, I don't want any of this anymore. I will not have a conductor. I need to find my own beat. That was my big thing. I wanted to be able to play with a swing. It was like, this is not delivering what I need to be delivered to as a musician. Classical music's just particular, and it doesn't give you a beat. And what's the point of being a musician if you can't hold a beat? It felt really essential. Yeah. And I thought traditional music's the closest place in my culture I know. Well, to getting a beat, basically. Do it for dancing, watch bodies and see what, so that seeing feeling of like.
What movement happens.
Hmm?
Seeing what movement happens.
Yeah. 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 And the kind of learning you get on the dance floor, watching bodies moving.
Yeah.
And that was all going on. And then there was an internal journeying, a lot of internal, well, so the traditional thread was really about landing in my own culture, needing to ground into my own culture, understand my history, and my culture, and improvisation has felt essential, because I think at this point, like what you were saying, we're all kind of swimming around very suddenly in a very, very uncertain world. And I think I've been subtly being prepared for somehow this point, and just picked up certain tools along the way that I felt driven to learn, and I've also wanted to share, but like you. And I do that, and I love doing that. Other influences are like interplay. I found interplay, you maybe have heard of that, you know, the small bite-sized chunks of improv-y stuff, and I think that's really pretty magic.
That is fun.
And then there've been longer form stuff, you know, playing with people for like hours, and it just finding its own enormous long wave of exploring and letting go.
So I'm curious. I imagine that a lot of people that are watching, I don't know who's liable to be watching really, but I imagine that at least some of them are people who will say things like, I don't have a musical bone in my body, or, you know, the idea of improvisation terrifies me, or, you know, the idea of trying to step into that level of vulnerability can be pretty frightening. Did you ever have, stage fright, or did you ever have?
Yes, I've had some really bad stage fright. Like, I forgot the words to Auld Lang Syne when I was singing it for President Clinton. You know, I've had some big bad boobies, big bad ones. That was particularly bad, but a lot. When I was little, I did forget the tunes I was supposed to be playing, you know, and then I would improvise and make them up. That was my way. But I think what I like about the interplay way that I've discovered is that it makes that very accessible to people. Like before they know it, they realize this is an improvisation, what we are doing right now. And just taking that step, I love the other thing of self-consciousness is not a roadblock, it's speed bumps. Self-consciousness is speed bumps, not a roadblock. I think somebody said that to me once, and
Like
that
that.
was a big help. I like that too. It means like, you are going to get a little bit uncomfortable, but the more you do it, you get used to it and it doesn't need to stop you. And I got that from the Interfaith folks, and there were some lovely things that they talk about around self-consciousness stopping a lot from happening.
Nice. 'Cause that's the dance, isn't it? Like having this tug of war dance thing with our minds and the critical mind or the self-conscious mind that wants to get in and try to explain or evaluate and whatever it wants to do to try to do what it does. And you're sitting there trying to kind of navigate it so that it's
You're not giving yourself permission. I know, exactly. It's hard to give ourselves permission to, and also we tend to go into sometimes if you're like a professional, or improviser or whatever you do, you try and shape these things into good compositions, and that you're like, actually, there's got to be a completely free space for something. It's giving yourself permission, and like, oh, but of course, all those, that mind and the thing, and they're fighting each other. And I mean, I've had times, in fact, when I improvise in concerts, it takes a lot of courage, and I come and go with it. But the funny thing is, as soon as I improvise, when there's another body in the room, the notes come really clear what notes to play. Or there's something, it's like that link of outside of ourselves, letting go of my being aware of myself helps the whole thing happen much, much more easily. So if I was playing notes on behalf of you or moving your hand, it comes out more easily. And there seems to be a secret in that that I know the Interplay folk have kind of tapped into, and they allow those encounters to happen to make it a little bit easier. I know I'm slipping around between various sort of
No, I like
things,
I
going in
like
funny directions, I'm afraid.
No, I like the connection that you just made between the like the connection that you make with somebody in the audience, if somebody is out there, that somehow that helps to unlock some sort of flow that makes it possible for the ideas to come more easily and for you to be more open to them. Like that somehow is a
It kind of
catalyst.
grounds it. It can ground it in a way that sometimes, if you just go into your kind of internal system, you can get looped into your own patterns and re-emphasize your emotional patterns. And I mean, that's a really interesting area, like our emotional body and what's going on, the patterns that we find hard to break out of. It does show up very clearly in music, doesn't it? And sometimes it's by looking at another body that I'll suddenly find there's notes to be played that I wouldn't normally be playing, but I want to do these ones. So yeah, how do we break the patterns that we're used to living in? Last night was funny because we had a little Kaylee downstairs, a little tune. Otis was playing his fiddle, and Dina's wife was playing the guitar, and I was playing the viola, and we each took a turn. And Otis writes these tunes, and honestly, they go in so many amazing directions. And we were just talking about how people's brains and the emotion, the harmonic patterning, everyone has their own sort of patterns that they like to return to, and I'm the same.
You're right. Right. We create these ruts in our systems and
We do it despite ourselves.
so that I have a funny story that I like to tell about that. One of Miles Davis's musician friends is said to have approached him once and said, he said, I'm so bored with my solos. I'm just, I've been playing this, the same stuff for years now, and I'm just bored to death with them. He said, but your solos are always, I've been listening to you for years, and your solos are always fresh. It's like every time you play, it's new and interesting and compelling. And like, how the, it's like, what can I do to, to make my solos fresh and more interesting again? And Miles just looked at him and said, play a different note. Play a different note. It's
Leap
like
into
go
the
down
unknown.
the road, you know, like something different. And it's
I
like
know.
we sort of make these things like so hard, and it's like, oh, how can I break out of this rut? And it's like, well, do something different.
I was doing that last week. I was messing about it. It's always the end of a phrase, da 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 do dee, or da be dee dum dee, and I'm going dee dum dee dum dee, do do do. Just like pick a new note, move you in another direction.
Right.
I've been seriously modal for the last few years, though. I'm finding it hard to move beyond two chords, personally. That's giving me extreme pleasure.
Well, you
so,
know, I was about to say, do you want to, or is it working?
Yeah.
It's working.
Yeah, it's working for me. Like, there was a thing about this beat and needing to get the pulse. And I came to Cape Breton in Nova Scotia, where I am right now, actually. And it was here that I heard a pulse that absolutely floored me. And I thought, I want to absorb that pulse. I want to learn how to do that. Well, of course, it was like the old Scottish music.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself almost being pulled into another ancestor. You know, the whole thing came up and I was like, whoop. You don't really know who you're working for when you're doing this kind of work. For myself, when I'm working for those guys behind it. Anyway. So
stepping into a new territory.
Got into the beat, just sat there, thought this is enough. And then actually once the beat came and I got settled in this pulse and felt secure in it, then the viola, all I needed was one note, maybe two, and my voice was starting to loosen up. And it was as if there was a loosening up as I grounded myself. And this is a time we're all trying to ground. I know all my work is around grounding. And I know that my voice settled into something as I sensed this ground, and it was like the pulse was really represented the ground.
So the pulse is this grounding influence in the music. It's this thing that you can depend on.
Yes.
I had a psychologist reflect back to me once that one of the psychologically from his standpoint did some research in psychology and read a lot of research in psychology, and he said the thing about a pulse that is so powerful for people is that it sets up a pattern that the brain, you know, we're always looking for security, we're always looking for something that we can, you know, kind of feel grounded and feel we can
secure.
Trust yeah,
yeah.
Secure. And so when a beat happens, when a sound happens, and then a certain amount of time passes, and our internal system says it's going to happen now, and when it does happen again, then that's reassuring. It's like fundamentally reassuring to our system, our physiological and mental systems, and it says, oh, I can trust this. This is something that I can relax. I can be okay. I'm safe here. And so, yeah, there's a real genuine power, grounding kind of energy in a pulse that helps us to feel safe.
Yeah, and seems to hold a lot of ceremony, you know, ceremony work, for instance, going into that arena of like, what's the function of pulse, you know, in the subtle body, in collectivity, in society, in that sense of, it's got that grounding and it holds you. But there was something about the voice being able to play much, much more freely with that grounding there that I found really interesting.
Uh-huh.
And if I wasn't able to go into the improvisations that deeply until I could settle my pulse, you know, or at least I didn't want to, or something was going on. It was just kind of a very interesting. So there's the role of the pulse. And I wonder, I'm not sure about this, but somebody maybe has said to me one time, and I think it's interesting, that the emotional journey is more the level of the harmonic progressions. So that's a kind of emotional realm. Not everything, but, you know, we often get very caught in the emotion. And one other thing I'd like to do and I'm interested in is the idea of demystifying emotion, you know, and starting to see it for what it is, and that it's not... you know, get into, there's emotion and then there's physical and mental and, you know, emotional, and they not let their emotions rule the roost. That might be just be my conditionings that want that to be cleaned up a bit at the moment. But
yeah,
having that sense of harmony, understanding harmony, and therefore if I want to change my emotional condition and say find other options of feeling differently about a situation, yeah, finding new roots of harmonic roots could be a really direct, interesting way of playing around that.
So I love the way you just put that, the harmonic roots. The way that I teach piano is different is from anybody I know. I don't know of anybody that does this. And one of the ways that I teach is to help people to learn the different 12 keys of a piano keyboard, and so that then they can play in any key. But that, so they're up here and they may be playing any of these particular seven notes in any given key. But then the bass note that you're playing is the note that determines the mood. It determines the emotionality of these other notes. You know, it provides the context. So, you know, whatever the bass player is playing against the notes that you're playing up here or that you're singing is the note that provides the mood. It provides the emotional. It's the emotional root, the way you just said it. It's the emotional root of the, it holds the context in a way that will either feel happy or sad or some, you know, more nuanced variation of happy or sad, right? And there's, so it's literally true, I think, at least in terms of the musical experience that we have listening, that the harmonic progression is the thing that's taking us down an emotional path. The journey.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I think there is that.
So,
the viol, do you want me to play a tune? Not a tune, but
sure.
Sing a song.
Please.
All right. Okay, so the latest work that I did was for this huge puppet called Storm. And they called her Storm, and they've made, in Scotland, she's been walking the streets in Glasgow. She's 10 meters tall. And has been made for a big event, and they asked me to write the music. So I wrote this very simple grounding song.
Nice.
I come from the sea. My memory is long, and my children, you are strong when you remember me. See you for me.
It's just sort of noticing the space that created, you know, that just playing a minute or two of some music shifted everything, shifted the mood, the emotionality.
Yeah.
Can
Thank
you
you.
talk a little
Well,
bit about
that's
when you wrote that, like when you created that, tell us a
Hey,
little bit about where that came from.
so what happened was that I went into the studio with Dave Gray, who is a guy that I work with. We've been working together for years. So, and I was like, I can't write words. I'm not very good at words. Find words very scary, but I had to have words. So I went in and I wrote, I come from the sea, my memory is long, my children, you are strong when you remember me. And I thought, it's not brilliant, but it'll have to do. And then I just got onto the mic and I did that thing that we all love to do, which is just mess about. You know, I mean, gave myself permission to just start. And somehow there's a little added amplified tension when you have a microphone in front of you and you are being recorded, but it's a good, I know it's a good thing in a way, and it picks up all the ideas you've got. So I just dove into it. I just sang the note words as they came out, and I was going, I don't know what I'm going to do with these words, but I'm just going to sing them and then let my voice wander. And then I stopped, and that was the tune that came out. And that was it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not like that. Sometimes it's like you do something, and I might, yeah, no, it's not often that like that, but it's nice to give yourself the permission to mess about like that. And that one
Yeah.
was good, but
Well,
others,
it just felt so straight through.
yeah.
And the last, you know,
Yeah.
I'm that last note is still hanging in my mind, you know. Da, da,
Well,
da,
that last note, I know. Well, those last notes, I just do them differently every time. So the thing I like to do is have a bit of a song, like a little kind of mantra song, and then somehow mess about with it. And what I did was I looked at you when I played that end of that song because I thought I'm going to just link out now and just feel myself into you. And when I looked at you, those other notes just kind of came in, you know.
Huh.
And I don't know if you have anything to do with it, but it helped me to find something that I might not have normally gone to, you know. Or...
Well, it was just captivating. It was fascinating to me. And so something about that thing that you just said and shared is so often fascinating to me about how music can somehow evoke or express something about humanity and something about connection that just can't be spoken in language. It just couldn't, it wouldn't, it would be too difficult to express something that, you know, two notes that seemed to feel right for you and was so intriguing to me, and then to come to find out that I had something to do with, you know, helping that to come through. It's just fascinating.
I just wish we had words to just to, I just we had, you know, if we had like in our culture heart songs or some, we made up something that made it all perfectly normal to do something like this, wouldn't it be great? You know, and I do think the indigenous, and I think the indigenous communities, and I mean, I know that that's a loaded word and everything, but I mean, I feel I'm interested at the moment in my older culture, you know, the pagan, the pre-Christian cultures, and I know that so all of that went on for thousands and thousands and thousands of years until very recently, relatively recently. And it's still in our bones and our bodies and our beings, you know, our elemental selves are needing to be out. My elemental self is, it's connected to land, and land is, something's going on, and we're just antennae for land. And I have to connect to the elemental self. Like, and it's not a brain thing, it's not clever, it's heart. And what is the heart? What is it trying to say? And how does that work? And it feels like a new portal almost, that's, or a new kind of time. And it's hard to trust it. And it's slightly like, you know, you don't want to be flaky and you don't want to be kind of what you perceive as. Anyway, it's all moving so fast. I do trust it, and I don't think, and we're not the only ones, are we? We all know that we're trying to, having to land and this elemental self. And sound is a, sound has its role in that.
Yeah, yeah. And it's hard for me to imagine that if, as we connect with that elemental self, and as we connect with the sounds or the energy of the natural world, that we might retune ourselves in such a way that we may actually become part of the healing process and become part of the retuning of the way we live, so that we're more in harmony, and maybe we would be a little bit more connected to the kinds of things that that an ecosystem may need from its human caretakers. And that's what
absolutely
makes me
curious. I so hope that is exactly what's going on.
Yeah,
I hope
yeah.
So I mean, the thing we have to go through is so many of the kind of tricky shadowy places, though. I mean, you know, you start getting down and you hit such terrain. It's fear, the shame, the guilt, the you know, lately I've been thinking it's only through the dark that I don't know what the light, the good stuff is going to feel like. It feels like you're having to plow through this, you know, shit the whole time. And mm-hmm. But I trust that's you know, it's learning how to do that. And that's where the improvisation feels really important, and the surprise of finding new ways.
Mm-hmm.
But it is the dropping into. I think the elemental is going to bring out so much fear. It does bring out fear. I mean, my missionary, all my grandparents were missionaries. And I know, oh, are you there? And
just
I know
you.
That this work that I'm doing is in Hello?
Yeah,
hello?
I lost you. I hear you. I hear you, but I don't see you. I just lost your camera.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Great. Well, our personal narratives and the way I'm improvisation or moving, whatever mode you want to use, just moving stuff out and through, because it's happening so fast now. It's essential somehow that there is an expression linked
yeah.
to the emotional body in this journey that we're doing, and that we find expressions for it in the
yeah.
freest possible way.
Yeah. Yeah. So that becomes part of
yeah.
the gift that you have to offer, and that we all have our own you know, unique gift. The biochemistry is telling us
yeah.
these days. The literally the thing that makes us unique from each other is literally the way we perceive the world. You know, that's in terms of biochemistry, you know, our cells are similar. The makeup is similar. The elements are the same. The cells are the same structure, et cetera. It goes on and on. But the thing biochemically that makes us unique is literally the way that our cells perceive the environment around it. And so the way we perceive the world is literally unique. And so it seems to me that one of the important things for us to be able to do is for me to be able to listen well enough to hear your gift, and to hear the special thing that you have to offer, and to learn how to express my own unique gift in a way that can be heard and experienced. And then through that process, then maybe we can sort of come up with better collective ways of approaching things.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, everyone, it's fascinating when you get really specific with, that's what I love. There's a community that I'm part of in Edinburgh. It's called the Authentic Artist Community.
Oh.
And it's run by a woman called Kath Burlinson. It was her kind of work, along with a guy called Paul Ortel. Now, Paul Ortel is extraordinary, and he's got a process that he calls the Discipline of Freedom. And you know, that balance of freedom and discipline, basically, and the holding of feeling
right.
free, but getting the right kind of frameworks that's going to make you feel held enough, but not so held that you aren't free. And that
yeah.
work in improvisation is really interesting
yes.
and really specific
yeah.
to everybody that works with them. And I've witnessed many, many courses over the last few years of very intimate courses, six people, everybody doing their own completely unique work. all sourced from exactly the same place. And witnessing, seeing that, working its way through the same people, the same collective, you know, over 10 years or so, is an amazing gift to see how that specificity of uniqueness is comes out. And then how people move as well, like maybe, I mean, I've started to paint a little bit, and I didn't think I could do that. But I thought, no, I want to try this now. And off it goes into that sort of vision thing. And then somebody else goes from dancing to needing to make music and use their voice. And someone goes from like being a poet to having to paint. And we find these connections between all these elements. And and it's understandable because we are needing to, we are expanding at the moment, and we are experiencing more of what we have and are. There is some energetic and evolutionary shift that's meaning, I feel anyway, is anyway making us see more of what we are. We are tickling our epics.
Yeah, we're tickling our epics.
We're tickling our epics. We have, you know, looking at it all. And when I jumped into making stage shows, I wanted to honor my, this is quite sort of, I felt like I was like, ooh, this is very old. Where's this coming from? But it was like, name your mother's. It was about naming ceremony. Name your mother's line, name your father's line. And then make these shows about digging where you stand. And I wanted to use all these different elements in it, moving all of them. And that was influenced by a teacher I had for 10 years, 12 years of meditation teacher. And I loved that and learned really a lot rich. Internally. A lot of very rich, big journey. I did leave it eventually, but it taught me a lot about quietening inside and something around that. And then as when she died, and as soon as she died, I kind of found myself on the outside of the collective, but my music or what was wanting to happen on stage happened in a completely different way after that. I thought, right, let's bring story and myth to unique lives. So, yeah, personal narrative, essentially. That's
beautiful,
what I think I'm talking
beautiful.
About. And improvising. Yeah, carry on.
No, go ahead. I'll
I'll stop.
Well, I love everything you're saying. It feels like this could go on for, you know, the next several days. It's just so fascinating to hear these stories. And by the way, I may be coming over across the pond, and may actually be in your part of the world sometime this summer. So I want to throw that out there.
Let's see.
Great ritual.
Please do.
And so I've, you know,
oh,
I've really
to
enjoyed
chat.
This. What's that? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really. It's very good to meet what your work is. I'm intrigued by your piano work. I want to.
Oh, cool.
I want to know more about that.
Cool. Well, I want to ask you one more question and then give you an opportunity to make an offering. I know that you have something that you'd like to offer listeners. But I'd like to ask you if when you think about your ability to improvise music in a music performance setting or not just by yourself, and you think of those that orientation that you take for yourself when you're doing that, do you see that being helpful in other areas of your life in your other, you know, in your relationship life or you know, going about your day or how you navigate your day or your world in ways that might be different from how you would have done it if you didn't have those improvisation skills?
Yeah. Like I definitely make life, like I feel as if I kind of go more with the flow and I trust a bit more. I don't know. I just trust the unknown a bit more. We can, And also do things like, if I can't sleep at night, I'm not going to lie in bed and not do it. I'm just going to get up and hang out and do something. And I have long nights when I just don't feel like going to bed and I just mess about and I move from one thing to another and I can't concentrate on anything for terribly long. And I think I'm maybe not, it's quite common. And so there is this sense of I'm just going to let myself flow from what my interest takes me. Oh, I'm going to read a book now. Oh, now I'm going to do this. And trust that somehow I'll come around and things will get done. And I like that particular approach. It works for me. And yeah, it's kind of interesting. But for me, it's been a definite shift to do with improvising, I think.
Just ability to trust, to trust whatever's happening. Living a life of
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, trust and enjoying the connection as well. I mean, we could talk a long time about connection and fear of connection and fear of, and I wonder if these external fears of connections is to do with us not giving ourselves internal connective, allowing things to happen internally as well. Again, that looping of oneself to other and allowing that, allowing the hurts that have inevitably occurred and the barriers that have been put up to somehow have a different relationship, maybe. And I think that improvising gives you chances to drop into that in small incremental ways. And a little goes a long way of improvising. That's one of the phrases I love. A little goes a long way.
Well, Myri, this has really been great. Would you like to? I know you have an MP3 that you'd like to offer. So why don't you tell
Yeah,
us?
well, I'd like to offer everyone an MP3 of myself and my husband's singing "Auld Lang Syne," which we made another version of it last year, and it's the original version of "Auld Lang Syne." It's a song of kindness and friendship and connection. And this particular version was picked up for Sex and the City movie in 2008, so people might have heard it from that. That was a
Wow.
deal. It was big, but it's
That's
a
pretty
gorgeous
sweet.
song. It's an old tune, not the one you'll know, but it's all five verses. So I'd
Oh,
love
really?
you to have that. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. And it would be sung in your accent, which is awesome.
Yeah. Sing it in my accent, and it's the tune. Robert Burns wrote the words. Well, he wrote some of the words. And he heard an old man sing this tune, but then when Robert Burns sent the song to his publisher, added a couple of verses, his publisher suggested they change the tune to the one we know today. But actually, this old tune is not quite forgotten, although not a lot of people remember it. But I have it, so
Oh, that's
send
so
it on.
cool. That sounds like a real treasure. Thank you so much. This has been an amazing conversation with you. I really appreciate your time and your heart and your wisdom.
Thank you. Thanks,
Blessings,
Simon.
blessings
Yeah.
onward.
Goodbye.
All right, take care.